W 1590 AM Denmark, W 250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News
app.
News from Alex Stone. Tennessee House Republicans vote to expel two black Democrats, Representatives Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, for taking part in a gun control protest at the state capitol last week.
Is what's happening outside these doors by Tennesseans who want to see change a temper tantrum?
The Tennessee Republicans did not get enough votes to oust a third Democrat, Representative Gloria Johnson, who also took part in that protest. The White House revealing a summary report on the Afghanistan withdrawal, blaming the Trump administration for the deadly outcome.
We learned from Afghanistan, and we applied that lesson in Ukraine and Ethiopia, that being aggressive in the information space and being willing to move a little sooner maybe the best thing.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby. Autopsy results finding a Chicago firefighter who died while battling a high-rise blaze yesterday had a heart attack. Officials say the fire was started by combustible materials placed near a heat-generating appliance. This is ABC News. The Biden administration striking an agreement ordering 2.5 million solar panels from a factory outside of Georgia to be used in community solar projects. The New York judge overseeing former President Trump's criminal case is getting threats.
In recent days, police sources told ABC News Judge Juan Merchan's chambers has received dozens of harassing calls and defamatory emails. Most of the threats appear to have originated out of state, but the police are running down each one and assessing how serious they are. The Office of Court Administration said we have continued to evaluate and assess security concerns and potential threats and have maintained an increased security presence. Trump himself has lashed out at Merchan, calling him and his family Trump-hating in a speech hours after he appeared before the judge to plead not guilty to 34 felony counts. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
The liquor industry is pushing back on a proposal in Boston that would bar stores from selling single-serve bottles that hold 100 milliliters or less of alcohol. The council proposing it says it's to address alcohol abuse and litter. I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Bull Falls Radio, What's the Buzz Community Calendar, where we talk about what's got the community buzzing, sponsored by Current Technologies. Between powerful thunderstorms, ice storms, wind storms, and blizzards, Mother Nature can be unpredictable. But don't worry, when the power goes out, a cooler generator comes on. Covenant Community Presbyterian Church Extravaganza, Saturday, April 1st, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Come for breakfast, the kids' petting zoo, crafts, and Easter activities at the Covenant Community Presbyterian Church, 1806 Weston Avenue, Schofield. April 6th through the 8th, come for ABC Kids Wausau Children's Consignment Sale. Massive sale on kids' clothes, shoes, toys, furniture, and more. ABC Kids will be held at Central Wisconsin's Convention and Expo Center. And that's the buzz on Bull Falls Radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Medical marijuana may have GOP support this session. Republican Senator Mary Felskowski said during a Wisconsin policy forum that any measure will need the support of both the state's medical community and law enforcement. Recreational marijuana advocate Democratic Senator Melissa Agard says the most dangerous thing about marijuana in Wisconsin currently is that it's still illegal. Wisconsin is becoming an island of prohibition surrounded by states that are legalizing or will soon be legalizing marijuana use. Since the COVID pandemic, Wisconsinites have been spending more time outdoors. And now the Office of Outdoor Recreation wants to become a permanent part of the State Tourism Department. The office created in the 2019-2021 budget. The governor wants to make the office's three positions permanent and provide $1.1 million over the next 2 years. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let but stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Globe, and you know, are we at the end of capitalism? Is this the end of it? Because all the things that we were told, all things I learned in school, that, you know, of how, you know, prices and profits and costs and all that stuff worked, not happening now. The fact that prices keep going up and profits keep going up while wages are stagnant, and then blaming it on that, that's not how this game works. But here to share some thoughts and maybe give a different perspective than what I have, I've asked Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Great to be in your show, Rick.
So what do you make of this, you know, this economist who's come out and said, look, you know, this could be the end of capitalism. We're looking at the end of capitalism. What do you make of that?
I share his concerns. I really do. I think there's a reason to be worried. People are getting fed up with this. People are getting fed up with being treated like second-class citizens. And they're seeing the rich get richer. And I'm seeing people who get paychecks every week struggling to get by. It's not working. And our society, capitalism, depends on everyone cooperating with it. If we have riots in the streets, that's not good for capitalism. And it's not going to work. And, I mean, I don't think it's ending to tomorrow. But I do see the signs that we have to do something to make a change. So I think he's right.
And this is where I go back to a lot of the policies of the New Deal. The idea that there were guardrails to capitalism. Look, I argue, look, I'm a capitalist, but not a laissez-faire capitalist. You cannot allow the big fish to always eat the little fish, which is what's happened and why so many industries in this country are controlled by a handful of corporations. For you as an investor, I don't think that's a good thing. For me as a worker and a consumer, I know it's not a good thing. And for society, clearly not a good thing. But I don't see anybody really talking about moving us away from what's going on. Biden a little bit, but not really.
I think we have to. And you think about it, big businesses, big successful businesses, always have some kind of monopoly on something. You think of Google. Who competes with Google in doing what they do, searching on stuff on the internet? Who competes with Apple? Yes, Motorola competes with Apple in making cell phones. But it's really a unique product. Facebook, nobody actually competes with the Meta company that runs Facebook. And every successful company has some kind of a natural monopoly. I've just been looking at something simple, Rick. I've been looking at eggs. You know, I've been looking at the reports from this company, Cal-Maine, the biggest egg company in the world. They own a whole, they've acquired a bunch of others, so they're getting to have a monopoly themselves. They have like a fifth or something of all the eggs in the country are sold by them. Over the past year, looking, you know, the last quarter versus a quarter year ago, they doubled their sale of eggs. Their profits were up by 800%. Yes, the cost of eggs, the cost of producing the eggs, feeding the chickens, paying the farm workers, all that kind of stuff, it's up, but not even double. Whereas their profits are up 800%. So you're seeing it's the prices are not, prices for the people buying eggs in the grocery store are up, not because farmers are making more money, not because the stuff that chickens eat, I don't even know what chickens eat, but whatever it is that it costs more, not because the fertilizer costs more. Yes, all those things are true, but it's mainly up because there's more profits for the big companies that own all of the brands that buy all the eggs and you know, that produce all the eggs and sell it to all the grocery stores everywhere. Higher profits is what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And they're killing the goose, literally, that lays the eggs. The actual number of eggs people are buying is down a little bit. This isn't going to work for them in the long run of being greedy. And
but supposedly this is where you as an investor, all you care about is the next quarter, I'm told.
Not me. I have a four-year-old granddaughter. You know, I care about what things are going to be like in our country 20 years from now, 50 years from now, whatever. And I think people are just looking at the next quarter. Frankly, I think they're short-term greedy and long-term stupid.
There's a lot of truth in that. But again, I come back to our government policies. And this is something we've done to ourselves, I believe. You know, we had Teddy Roosevelt busting up the trust buster. We had Harry Truman going after war profiteers. We've got a history of undoing what's happening right now. I just don't see anybody who's doing it. And as I've been saying, I call for the next Harry Truman or Teddy Roosevelt. Because look, the monopolies are taking over. When you've got the kind of, as you pointed out, Google controls more than 60% of internet searches. We've got three credit card companies that control 95% of the market. You got, you know, three telecom companies, 80% of the market. And then you get into the food, handfuls of companies control the vast majority of what we eat. And that's been allowed to happen over decades now. And it's time for the Federal Trade Commission to actually do something.
I think a few of them are trying to do something about it. I think that a few of our congresspeople, you know, people like Katie Porter, people like Elizabeth Warren, understand these things and are trying to raise red flags and blow whistles and call for arms. But I think too many of our congresspeople, you know, they go to their big dollar fundraiser and they hear, well, I mean, these regulations, it would be just inconvenient for us. And yeah, it's just not good to, you know, require us to do things. And they believe it after a while. They just kind of give up on understanding what the rest of the world is like after they hear from the people they spend too much time with who are the big dollar donors. And they kind of forget.
Is it they forget or just don't care? It's about me. It's about more for me and the hell with everybody else. And because, you know, as a common everyday worker guy talking to other common everyday workers, I don't think corporate America gives a toot about any of us. It's about the profit margins. It's about that, what they can, if they can take that quarter and squeeze it till the eagle screams, they're thrilled.
I think that's all too true. And it's sad because I would prefer to have people thinking about what their company is going to be worth in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. And it's only going to be worth something if they're still selling stuff to people.
Yeah. And people have money to buy it. Let me ask you, you're an older guy. You've been in this game a long time. You've watched this change. I've had people who are older than both of us tell me, you know, back in the old days, you know, corporate profits were in the single digits. I look at, you know, our economy as a whole, last year was over 10% profit for the Fortune 500 companies. At least that's what the report says. How has this changed in your lifetime as an investor, as someone who pays attention to this stuff that maybe someone like me doesn't understand?
I mean, when I grew up, the corporate CEO lived in a better house than everybody else and maybe had two cars instead of one car and maybe had fancier suits and could get his hair cut every 3 weeks instead of every 3 months. But he lived in the same world as everyone else. He sent his kids to the schools that everyone else's kids went to. Now, it's a different world. You know, the heads of our major corporations can live, you know, behind big gated communities and send their kids to private schools and go off in jets. They don't even know the people that work for their companies. And it's just a different kind of thing. They've kind of removed themselves. I remember Abigail Disney said she knew something was wrong when her parents were going on vacation with her. This is the son of the guy who was the CEO when they opened Disney World. And he had a jet with private bedrooms in it. And it's just like they're removing themselves from all of society. And that's not going to work in the long run because the people are going to stop cooperating. Like the gentleman from SocGen said, Société Générale. They're going to give up. And we depend, as investors and business people, we depend on living in a country where everyone is cooperating, where everyone is sort of playing their part, and they understand, well, I'm not the CEO, but I'm getting paid fairly for my job, and I'm going to live my life and send my kids to a good school, and maybe they'll do better than I'm doing. But if people don't have that, if they don't have hope, then we're going to have people marching in the street, and they're not going to be paying a lot of money for eggs either.
No, you're absolutely so right. You know, the idea that if you work hard, play by the rules, and get ahead, if you don't believe that's the reality anymore, you're not going to work hard. I think you're absolutely right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. Morris Pearl. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org. I do want to change topics real quick because, you know, I've been seeing a lot on social media of people doing this massive freakout about the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now Saudi Arabia, moving away from the U.S. dollar. As an investor, you know, how concerned are you that this is going to be a big deal? Now, this is not new. They've been wanting to do this for years, but I've been just seeing a lot, an awful lot of doomsday traffic. So I'm curious if you have a thought.
Well, yeah, it's coming up now a lot, partially because the U.S. government is almost forcing them out. We have all of these sanctions against Russia. Russian banks aren't allowed to deal with the U.S. banks, almost aren't allowed to deal with U.S. dollars. So now they have a real incentive to do something about that. And yeah, I'm worried about it. I don't know what's going to happen this year as opposed to last year or next year. But over the long run, that is a big part of why the United States of America is as successful as it is, because other countries have to borrow money in U.S. dollars to do things, to buy oil, to buy airplanes, because those things are priced in U.S. dollars. So other countries need U.S. dollars. And the only people that create U.S. dollars is the United States, through the Fed and the Treasury. And if other countries don't need U.S. dollars anymore, we're going to have a big problem. We're going to lose that ability to create money that we now have. And that's going to be very bad. And I don't think that our people in the United States Congress, the Senate and the House, I think a lot of them don't understand that. They don't understand this exorbitant privilege we have. And they're willing to throw it away without even knowing what they're doing.
Yeah. How much of this comes back to, you know, even playing with this debt ceiling and in a very laissez-faire kind of way going, we're willing to do whatever a default would, whatever ripples, whatever chaos a default would cause across the globe. How much of this do you think plays into it as well? I get the sanctions on Russia. They did invade Ukraine. But how much of the other thing do you think plays into this?
I think it's a big problem. I think the people who are saying, oh, default, who cares? Why worry about it? I think they're wrong. I think if U.S. Treasury bills stop being worth what they're worth now and people invest in, I don't know, Russian rubles or Chinese, you know, Chinese currency or in other things, we are going to lose the ability to finance our country the way we have been. And maybe some people want that. Maybe some people want to have the U.S. government sort of lose so much ability to have, you know, finance the government the way it is and go into calamity. You know, the people that said, I want to make the government so small I can drown in the bathtub or something.
Yeah,
and maybe somehow they think that will somehow benefit them, but I think they're wrong. I think they're certainly wrong about benefiting anybody. I think they're even wrong about benefiting themselves.
We'll see where this goes. I've had a couple of people who have hair on fire. A couple of people were saying, look, Russia and China, their currency, I'd be more worried about that collapsing. So again, but the kind of chaos, not good for a globe that just not good. Last question I've got for you. I got to bring up the Trump thing because I haven't talked about it at all tonight. The one thing that you sent me that I thought was interesting, the part where will we find out if he actually tried to use it as a tax deduction?
Well, that is what Alvin Bragg's information with the indictment, there was a sentence that said they were attempting to falsify records to so as not to pay income tax. Now, that $175,000, maybe the lawyer paid income tax on it as it was income. He might have. I have no reason to believe that he didn't. But it's not deductible. It's not a business expense. Is paying off a porn star. I mean,
I guess it depends on your business.
When you pay off a porn star so as not to publicize your affair, do you deduct that on your taxes, Rick?
I don't have a wow. Thanks, Morris. No, I don't know any porn stars.
Okay. So, but I think most Americans don't. But Trump is trying to tell a jury of New Yorkers anyway, that paying off a porn star is a perfectly reasonable business expense and it's deductible. And I don't think that it should be, frankly.
Yeah,
and
I think that's something all of us could probably agree on.
My record's a serious problem.
I would hope that's something we could all agree on. But I wanted to finish on that, Morris. As always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Great to talk to you.
Wow, got me in trouble there. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this ought to drive me, this ought to drive my conservative friends nuts. The IRS is about to hire nearly 30,000 new IRS agents. It should drive them crazy. They're going to, because this is part of the plan to spend the $80 billion to invest in the IRS, new technology, better customer service, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, do a better job. Their long-awaited plan, this strategic operating plan, are going to spend $8.6 billion in 2023 and, I guess, $8.7 billion in the following year. Should drive them good and crazy. Now, look, I pay your taxes. And the Trump thing is just one of those things where you go, really? Did you really try it? Yeah, you know he did. Which is why, again, I was saying for the longest time, why he held on to those tax returns so long. It's not that there was a smoking gun crime there. It's that he's done some shady stuff. Pretty simple. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing today?
Oh, I'm totally insane, but that's cool. Okay. You don't know. First of all, I'm so tired of hearing about Donald Trump. It's like, oh, please, let him try to escape to Russia. Yay. Shall we set up a GoFundMe so he can buy fuel for the jet?
I would sign up for that.
Yeah, me too, you know? And the second thing I wanted to say is Tennessee has lost her ever-loving mind. I have a friend who moved to Tennessee about 20-some years ago. We were best friends. Well, we're still on friendly terms, but from first grade on. And that place down there is totally insane. We still keep in touch. And her son was in jail for shooting his cousin. Her husband passed away from COVID, and she had it because her doctor, a doctor, okay, told her that they didn't need to get them because he was into this QAnon stuff, because it would change their DNA. So I'm not surprised that they're going insane and getting rid of Democrats.
Yeah, no, look, I don't say they're going insane. I say they've been there. They're just being who they are. And this is another one of those things. When someone tells you who they are, believe them. They've been telling us this for years. You know, the Shelby County case came out of Tennessee.
Well, that's true. And you must remember, during the Civil War, Tennessee was right there on the bandwagon beating the drum. But they've all lost their mind. And for these people wanting to do the check the genitals of the child, I'm going to tell you what. Somebody would have tried that trick, and I don't care who it was, if they weren't a doctor with my child or even with my grandchildren. Well, let's just say you'd be having a GoFundMe for me.
You'd see something, all right. Maybe in a couple of days.
Yeah. They've all lost their mind.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick.
I appreciate it, Alice. Thank you. No, I don't disagree with her. But look, with the Tennessee thing, sadly, you know, this is who they are. The Republicans there have shown their hand again and again and again. The question is will everyone else believe it? Look at the majorities of people. 72 people voted in the House there. 72 of them voted to oust this guy. 72 to 25. How is that state so lopsided? How is that state got so few Democratic voices in it? It's a big part of it's got to be the race issue. A big part of it's got to be, you know, all of the division that's been thrown out. How is it that, I guess some gerrymandering goes into this as well, but you know, explain to me how a state is that lopsided. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you'll find ours. Real quick, I got to get to this Tesla story. And I may follow up on this a little later, but Tesla evidently, some workers have shared what they're calling sensitive images that were recorded by customers' cars. Now, remember, they tell you privacy. It is and always will be enormously important to us. We as a country, and you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this. We as a country have given up on our privacy. You know, be it social media, be it, you know, everyone's now got a Ring doorbell. Everything's being recorded at every moment. And you got people, well, it's going to slow down on crime. I'm not so sure. I'm not so crazy on that front. But the fact that we have all of these devices that we put into our home that corporate America has the ability to pull the levers on and no oversight. This is my problem with this stuff. No oversight from our government. And yet they want to ban TikTok, of which I don't have a TikTok account. But if I did, I would want to make sure that someone was minding the store. We are definitely in very bizarre times. But if you own a Tesla, somebody could be watching and sharing your videos. So be careful what you do. Try to be fully clothed. Just throwing it out there. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day that the United States declared war on Germany and entered World War I. The war had been raging since 1914, but the U.S. did not enter the conflict until 1917. Dubbed the War to End All Wars, the conflict transformed the work experience for many women. As men went off to fight, industries looked to women to fill the labor shortage. By the end of the war, 3 million new women workers had taken jobs in war industries and at work sites like food production facilities and textile mills. A year after the U.S. entered into the war, the Seattle Union Record described the impact on women workers, writing, "There has been a sudden influx of women into such unusual occupations as bank clerks, ticket sellers, elevator operator, chauffeur, streetcar conductor, railroad track walker, section hand, locomotive wiper and oiler, locomotive dispatcher, block operator, drawbridge attendant, and employment in machine shops, steel mills, powder and ammunition factories, airplane works, boot blackening, and farming." The Department of Labor established the Women in Industry Service to address the needs of this growing women's workforce. After the war, the initiative was renamed in 1920 to the Women's Bureau. Its charge was to, quote, "formulate standards and policies which shall promote the welfare of wage-earning women, improve their working conditions, increase their efficiency, and advance their opportunities for profitable employment." Yet after the war, many women were not able to keep their new jobs. Men returning from the battlefront expected women to return home and open up jobs for male workers.
I have to concede one point. Today's far-right Republican Party does not discriminate against women. In fact, the GOP is giving its female political buffoons a higher profile than its male bozos. Consider Sarah Huckabee Sanders, governor of Arkansas, who became a star in the new Republican crusade to bring back child labor abuse. Pushed by their corporate backers, GOP governors and lawmakers exclaim that the answer to America's so-called labor shortage is not to make jobs more attractive, but to fill them with cheap, compliant children. Huckabee Sanders rushed to the aid of these corporate powers, eliminating a bothersome Arkansas law that had required Tyson, Walmart, and other big employers to get a special state permit to put any child under 16 to work. "The meddling hand of big government creeping down from Washington, D.C., she bellowed, will be stopped cold. We will get the over-regulating, micromanaging, bureaucratic tyrants off your backs." So she is using the meddling hand of big state government to creep into the lives of vulnerable children. She is not alone. Ohio's Republican-controlled state government is moving to extend the number of hours bosses can make children work. Iowa wants to let 14-year-olds work in industrial freezers and laundries. And Republicans in Congress have shrunk the number of investigators and lawyers policing child labor abuse so abusive corporate managers know there is little chance they'll be caught. Most damning, these corporate politicians value children so little that they've set the maximum fine for violating the workplace safety of minors at $15,000 per child. For multimillion-dollar conglomerates, that devaluation makes it much cheaper to endanger children than protect them. This is Jim Hightower saying America should not even be talking about child safety rules in dangerous workplaces. It's shameful to have any children working there.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I tell you, I like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You know, just saying what everybody should be thinking. The ProPublica piece dropped today that Clarence Thomas, one of our Supreme Court justices, one of the six conservative dictators in robes, he's been taking money from a billionaire. And look, we've known some of this stuff over the years, but this piece is kind of laying out just how bad. And now Representative Ocasio-Cortez is saying, look, he's got to be impeached. It's time for him to go. How can you be impartial? How can you make good judgments when you're on the dole? And I got to tell you, I think I agree with her. That's why I've asked Katie O'Connor to come talk with us. She's the deputy chief counsel over at Demand Justice, their website, demandjustice.org. Katie, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So walk me through what this ProPublica piece is saying. Because, look, I've always thought that these guys are way too cozy with the think tank crowd, doing the Alex circuit, you know, doing all of this hobnobbing with our billionaire class while making what is they claim a meager salary. Walk me through what the charges here are.
Well, I think there are two really stunning things about this piece. I mean, one is that there is this one particular Republican mega donor, Harlan Crow, who has over the past 20 years hosted Clarence Thomas and his wife, Jenny Thomas, probably at least once a year at his many estates throughout the country, as well as on his yacht and on his private jet. You know, and I think that in and of itself, the sheer volume of, you know, the 20-year trips that they've taken together and the millions of dollars that Harlan Crow has spent on Clarence Thomas and his wife taking those trips. You know, I think the other really surprising thing for me is just that as meager as the laws are that dictate what Supreme Court justices can and can't do ethically, Clarence Thomas has actually broken those laws. You know, they are the weakest of all the branches of government in terms of ethics violations, and Clarence Thomas seems to have violated them nonetheless.
No, I mean, look, there's a lot of questions about people on the Supreme Court with where they've got a bunch of money. And, you know, I think of Justice Kavanaugh there with those questions, who paid off all his debts, which we still don't have answers to. But, you know, as I go back to, you know, there have been these stories of, again, of these justices being in this world, you know, going to these exclusive clubs and stuff. Who pays for this stuff? And what allegiance do they then have to give to pay it back? You know, this is one of those things that I think average everyday people should be paying attention to. And I fear that we've become so jaded that they're all corrupt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. We have become a little bit jaded. And I think the past 6 years have really taught us that our democracy is in need of a real reform, of a real reckoning with how jaded the American populace has become and how corrupt most of the politicians have become. And make no mistake, Clarence Thomas and his fellow Republicans on the Supreme Court are politicians in robes. You know, but this particular person, Harlan Crow, he has given $10 million in political contributions. Those are the ones we know about. That doesn't include any dark money that he's given to organizations. You know, he's a founding committee member for the Club for Growth, which has been a major opponent of the ACA and an opponent of climate action. He served on the board of the AEI, a right-wing think tank. And he's also given to Jenny Thomas's own political interests, at least on one occasion that we know of.
No, and these are all questions I think that are really important that have to be answered. And I think Thomas should have to stand trial for this. I mean, you're right. Ethically speaking, the people in the robes have the least amount of accountability. Maybe it's time we start looking at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I share your enthusiasm at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calling for an impeachment inquiry that is absolutely needed. You know, I do hope that the Senate Judiciary Committee immediately starts investigating these particular allegations against Clarence Thomas And I hope that the House does draft articles of impeachment just in order to run the inquiry that's necessary to get to the bottom of this. And if, you know, depending on where the facts lead, I hope that impeachment follows. But I do want to mention that I think this latest ethics scandal is sort of a symptom of a much larger problem, which is a judiciary that feels like it is far, far above the law. Yep. And there are a lot of, you know, to the extent that that's the case, it's going to take a lot more than just impeaching Clarence Thomas to fix the problem.
Oh, you're right there. But here's the thing. I was just thinking about this when Antonin Scalia died. You know, he was at an exclusive ranch somewhere in Texas. As a guest of the owner, this John Poindexter. And I remember at the time going, you know, who was paying for that? You know, yeah. And do they get a lot of this? And I got to wonder, was there anything, because I'd asked at the time, was there anything Poindexter wanted or had in front of the courts? And I had a couple of people say that there were things. And I'm going, yeah, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with that. I think we all should be.
Yeah, I think the difference now is, well, twofold. I mean, I think, first of all, the brazenness of what the justices are doing, just having reached a point where they know that there's not going to be any accountability or consequence for ethical misconduct. I think the other big difference between what we saw, you know, 15 years ago with, 5 years ago with Justice Scalia and what we see now is the fervor with which the justices seem to be doing the bidding of the people who are paying for their fancy vacations. We're seeing a real acceleration of right-wing jurisprudence on the Supreme Court. And I think that that's a consequence both of the court having a six-justice supermajority and also this sense of impunity that they are feeling. So, you know, the lawlessness that we see with the ethics violations is also seen in the way that the court is creating its jurisprudence right now. I mean, you see the court ignoring inconvenient facts in a lot of cases, bypassing procedural rules. A great example there is how much you see happening on the shadow docket where the court is not explaining itself or even explaining the law behind its decisions. The court is bucking precedent. We just saw the court overturn Roe versus Wade, a 50-year precedent, and for the first time ever, stripping, you know, the American public of a constitutional right. So this lawlessness that we see in ethics violations, I think, is clearly sort of like running into the actual jurisprudence of the court, too.
Well, it's the reason I call them the six dictators in robes, because there's no accountability there. And you know, the joke has always been they should be like NASCAR robes. We should know who's bought and paid for them because, sadly, money is speech. And where'd we get that from? Oh, yeah, the Supreme Court.
Yep, that's right. There are a number of laws that do apply to the Supreme Court. And that's why I mentioned that I think what makes today's revelation pretty incredible is that as weak as those laws are, it appears that Clarence Thomas may have violated one of them. Justices are bound by two laws that require them to file financial disclosures that include, disclosing gifts that they received, including, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of paid vacations. And they're also, you know, required to sort of limit outside income, as well as a law that requires them to recuse in cases where there is reason to believe that they're biased. Yeah.
No, but again, it comes back to this money thing. And I go back to, you know, Donald Trump in 2015. One of the only things I actually believe that came out of his mouth is that he bought everybody, that it was the money that he greased all the palms. And our Supreme Court, you know, I don't think is any different. So the question that I have for you is, you know, with the organization that you're part of, you know, how do we fix this? Is there a way to fix this?
I think there is. I think Congress is going to have to pretty strongly exert its power over the Supreme Court in terms of exercising some checks and balances. I think the reason the Supreme Court justices are behaving the way they are is because they think that they are above the law and that there will be no consequences. So there are a number of reforms that I think the Congress needs to impose on the Supreme Court. You know, first and foremost, the Supreme Court is, these are the only 9 judges in the country that are not bound by a code of conduct. So there are a number of really great pieces of legislation that would finally impose a code of conduct on the justices so that they are accountable to someone for ethical behavior like this. But I wouldn't stop there. I think that there really are structural problems with the Supreme Court that we see now, based on what's happened over the past 10 years, the flood of money into politics, which includes the flood of money into Supreme Court confirmation fights, a Supreme Court that's basically been bought and sold by Republican donors of the past 10 years, and that's now really out of balance ideologically. So in addition to the ethics rules, I think Congress needs to exercise its checks and balances by adding seats to the Supreme Court, implementing term limits, making these 9 incredibly powerful people more accountable to Congress, to the executive branch, and to the people they're meant to serve.
Wow. Imagine that. Hold on. Let me go into fantasy land for a second. Well, because the sad reality is that's not been the last several years for a lot of years. So it's almost, I think a lot of us who are jaded are going, we can't do anything when children are being slaughtered in schools. What do you think people are going to care when Clarence Thomas goes on an expensive vacation that some billionaire paid for or gets his pocket lined? Or am I too jaded, do you think?
I think it's hard to be optimistic right now. We see a Congress that's not very good at doing any legislating. But I do really, truly hope that there is going to be a point where the dam breaks. Congress realizes they've been put there for a reason. Our democracy is on a precipice and they're going to have to do something to help fix it. And what I really hope is that when that happens, court reform is part of that fix.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Katie O'Connor. She's the deputy chief counsel for the folks over at Demand Justice, demandjustice.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. So walk me through what this could look like, because this is kind of where I want to end. And then how do we make sure it happens? What is the process to impeach a sitting justice? Has it ever happened before? And how do we push the Senate into doing what needs to be done?
The process for impeaching a justice is actually the same as the process for impeaching a president. So you would need the House to have a trial, or you would need the House to go through the impeachment process and then the Senate to have a trial. Unfortunately, in this political climate, that's incredibly unlikely to be successful. But I think it's still important to air the truth to the American people. And so even if it is, not going to end with Clarence Thomas being stripped of his black robe, It's an opportunity for us to learn the truth about all of the millions of dollars of gifts that he's been getting. Not to mention, the other ethical violations. I mean, the news is happening so fast, it's hard to remember that Ginni Thomas was, actively strategizing with Mark Meadows about the overturning of the 2020 election while her husband was on the Supreme Court deciding cases related to that election. So there's so much to unearth here. And even if the Senate, even if the Congress can't, reach the finish line in terms of taking Clarence Thomas off the court, this is important for us to hear about.
No, and it's important to find out where all the money comes from, because, Ginni Thomas, I don't think gets the positions of power that she was in dealing with Mark Meadows and a lot of these lunatic groups. I'm just going to say that she's not going to be at the head of this if her husband's not on the Supreme Court. If she's Jenny from the block, she ain't sitting on any of these committees.
Yeah, that's right. It's incredible when you look at people like Leonard Leo and just the incredibly complex network of organizations that he's running that has helped get people like Clarence Thomas on the bench. That is also helping to challenge election results in elections like 2020, and that is simultaneously you know, participating in coalitions that Jenny Thomas runs and contributing to organizations that Jenny Thomas sits on the board for.
So what do people do tomorrow? What's the marching order?
So I think a call for impeachment is important. I think a call for broader court reform is also really important. If you're interested in that, please do visit our website, demandjustice.org. We have a lot of information about the whole host of court reforms, and I think this is just one more reminder that we really need comprehensive court reform in addition to and as part of the broader democracy reform that we all recognize is desperately needed right now in this country.
Excellent stuff. Katie, I appreciate the time. Hope folks will check out demandjustice.org. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Thanks so much.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Often, southern states are the focus of histories of slavery in the United States. But did you know that in the early 1700s, 1 in 5 residents of New York were enslaved Africans? New York merchants had a trading relationship with the Caribbean, which had a large enslaved population. This brought enslaved people to New York, but since there were no large plantations in the colony, most of these enslaved people worked as carpenters, fishermen, or stonemasons. On this day in labor history, the year was 1712. A group of 20 to 70 enslaved Africans armed themselves with guns, swords, and hatchets. They set fire to a building in the center of town, attacking the white settlers who tried to put the fire out. The armed insurrection killed 9 white settlers and injured several more before the militia arrived. As many as 70 enslaved and free black people were arrested for the revolt. Several chose to commit suicide rather than go to trial. More than 20 were executed. Most were hung, and a few were burned at the stake. The revolt resulted in the passage of tougher slave codes. Enslaved people were forbidden from carrying weapons or meeting in groups of 3 or more. Punishments could include whipping. For the next 150 years, this pattern repeated. Slave uprisings in the United States would be followed by brutal repression and a tightening of slave codes. In New York, slavery remained legal until 1799. Even then, New York only adopted an act for the gradual abolition of slavery. This meant that those enslaved before July 4th, 1799, would remain in bondage. Slavery was not fully eradicated in New York until 1841. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do get to the angry, hateful emails as quick as possible, but I do answer all emails personally. Got one from John listening on WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. He said, not everyone needs a union. You keep talking about unions. Why? Unions are a thing of the past. Stop. We don't need them anymore. That's all you talk about. Because I do think that it's what helped build the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. That when my grandparents' generation came back from fighting fascism overseas, they came back home to the shop floors and fought for a share of those profits. Understand, if we had 35% of the workforce in unions right now, if you had that, instead of 6.6, if you had 35%, do you think... Just walk with me, if you will, here, John. Do you think the gross profits, let's take the egg industry that Morris talked about a minute ago, that had an 800% increase in profits. Do you think the workers who drive the trucks and feed the chickens and do all of the slaughter, do you think all of those people would go 800% increase in profit and I'm making barely poverty? I want some of that. Do you think that people who have the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, would do it? And do you think we would have some of the problems we have now with the just outrageous greed and the greedflation that's going on? And if we did, the wages would keep up. And I looked at my, you know, my grandfather told me in the mid-70s when we were going through the whole stagflation thing. His union contract had a cost of living adjustment in it. If it hit a certain point of inflation, their wages went up. And in 1 year, they got three increases. Why? So their wages didn't get eroded by inflation. Right now, what's going on and what corporate America is doing masterfully and what our government is failing at is the minimum wage hasn't been raised in, what, 14 years? Wages haven't gone up, basically still stagnant. Ticking. Profits through the roof. So as prices continue to rise, wages go down. You're still making that $7.25 an hour, but if now you've got to buy, let's say, a Happy Meal for $5. A Happy Meal, $5, can take you almost an hour of labor to get your kid a Happy Meal. Rents have skyrocketed. Fuel costs have skyrocketed. Wages haven't kept up. We, as I said, corporate profits have gone through the roof. They have seen record profits. And you're going to say workers don't need the ability to demand some of the wealth that their labor creates? And that workers don't need to have a contract? Let me tell you who has a contract. And come a little bit closer and listen really good, because this is important. Every CEO in this country has a contract. When you hear about a CEO getting these enormous severance packages and these enormous, you know, firing bonuses, I think of John Nardelli, the former CEO of Home Depot. When they fired him, he got $210 million. Not because Home Depot thought he was a good guy, not because Home Depot liked him, not because Home Depot was going to make sure that he would have a little extra cheese on his Whopper, not because of any of that, but because he had what? What'd he have? He had a contract. And every working person in this country should have that same contract. But we seem to be okay with being at will, at the whim of the employer. Yeah, today you have a job. But if I get a bug up my behind tomorrow, maybe not. Do you think he can be fired for, you know, taking a piece of pizza out of a refrigerator? Do you think he can get fired for wearing an orange shirt? Yeah, you can, because you have no rights without what? A contract. Because again, what we have in this country is at-will employment. Now I know, Rick, workers have rights. Yeah, some federally protected, some state laws. But that's generally age discrimination. That's generally race discrimination. If an employer just says, you know what, don't need you, there's the door. Good luck. As where a contract lays that out. And this is why I'm such a big proponent of unions. I see the numbers. And there's a great graph, as I've said, from the end of World War II up to the mid-70s, as productivity went up at a nice 45-degree angle. Nice on the chart. Perfect. Wages kept up right with it, right there. Because you had unions that were strong enough to say, you know what, this is great. Love the fact that you're making profit. Love the fact that our productivity is making you more money. But you know what our productivity gains are getting? Us more money, too. Better health care, better retirement security, maybe a little vacation, maybe some opportunities for education and training, all that stuff. What's been lacking the last 40 years? They've now turned it into our education system is where you go to get your job training. Employers, when I was a kid, you could still find an employer that would hire into the mailroom and work your way through places. It doesn't happen much anymore. Why? Because corporate America just cares about the bottom line. And there's nobody out there fighting for you and me. So, John, I feel for you. And I hope this is a wake-up moment. Because I know my conservative friends love to hate on the unions because they support Democrats, because Republicans hate working people. But this is where we are. And I'll tell you, if we had that 35% union density, we'd be a much more prosperous working class and a different country. But I want to hear your thoughts. And John, thanks for the email. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. If you miss any of the show, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you will find ours. Appreciate you tuning in. Look forward to seeing you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.